Evening. My name is Kent McLean. Thought I'd join the family since taken over. Ooh, that'll be another 10 minutes to the sermon. You never do that at the beginning of the sermon, Gene. It's always at the end of the sermon. Yes, boy, you made a mistake. Remember that Ezra 8 chapter? It stood from noon to midday. Yes, well. Ronald Reagan said the government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. Every year, people frantically race to get their taxes done as we look forward to this joyous celebration of our yearly burden. The idea of a personal income is somewhat of a personal tax income thing, is something of a modern invention. If you lived before 1913, you didn't have it. They tried a little bit after the Civil War, and then it didn't work, and they got over that. But somebody had the brilliant idea in October of 1913 that we need to just tax everybody. And so here we are today, and it's not just about the fact that tomorrow is the day, although, as we said, that the reason that it's the 18th is because Friday was Emancipation Day, and in Washington, D.C., that's a holiday, and since that was on the 15th, and you know those federal people, they got to have their holiday, and that was put their holiday on Saturday, and so you're needing this explanation, I know. They decided to have their day off on Friday and move tax day to Monday. So that's government for you, but, you know, whatever. People wonder sometimes, well, we pay taxes in the United States of America, and are we supposed to? Is that something that we're obligated to do? Because as Christians, we have some ideas about our freedoms and things that sometimes we really are a little bit confused about. Well, it's interesting that in the Bible, there's a lot that says about taxes. As a matter of fact, there's sort of the biblical history of taxes. We have recently studied in the book of Genesis that when Joseph took over the country, because you remember there was the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. And that when, of course, following the story of his brothers and him declaring himself to them, he kind of got down to business and food began to run out, then the money began to run out. And so when you read in Genesis chapter 47, he really just started taking things. And first he took their money, and then he took their animals, and then he took their land. And that was sort of a sense of taxation as what they were having to do. And what's interesting about all of that is that in archaeology, they have dug up a lot of tablets that speak about a lot of taxes, and that the Egyptians indeed were heavily taxed. Whether this is specifically correlated to the days of Joseph, we're not suggesting, but there was a history of some pretty heavy taxes, to where some of the hieroglyphic tablets depict tax collectors as punishing the peasants for not having paid their taxes on time. And they pretty much did not like tax collectors because they made their life pretty hard. There is actually a Sumerian proverb that says, you can have a lord, you can have a king, but the man to fear is the tax collector. And so it's sort of been around for a long time. David was told when he came as a young man to the field to bring food to his brothers, and he wanted to know what that racket was out there in the valley. And they said, well, that's Goliath, and he's screaming and hollering and yelling. And the king has said that if somebody goes out there and knocks that guy's block off, well, he'll give him, his daughter. I would have stopped right there and thought, wait, never mind. One of the things that was said was that whoever killed Goliath, his family would be exempt from paying taxes for the rest of their lives. That's a pretty good deal. Don't plan on going out and killing anybody, please. That's not a good idea. In Ezra chapter 7, during the building of the second temple, King Artaxerxes wrote in Ezra 7:24 that we inform you that it shall not be lawful to impose tax, tribute, or custom on any of the priests, Levites, singers, gatekeepers, or the servants of this house of God. So there was tax exemption, the fact that he allowed those taxes to be exempt. And then even in the book of Nehemiah, this was sort of a bad financial thing, you know, bad financial advice. Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 4, the complaint about taxes were that they said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our lands and vineyards. And, you know, that's just, you know, credit cards are not new. It may not be plastic, but it isn't new. And so they were doing a very dangerous thing of actually borrowing money to pay the king's taxes. Well, in the days of Jesus, they pretty much hated tax collectors for a number of reasons. Number one, they collected taxes. But number two, that particularly for the Jews, they represented the Roman government. The Jews hated the Roman government. And so when you had a Jew who was a employee of the Roman government, they were despised because the Romans were the oppression of the Jews. And so Jesus was often condemned because he ate with the tax collectors and the sinners. And this term sinner, while I know we're all sinners, this term sinner were those low-class people, those people that are of no character whatsoever. And yet Jesus spent a lot of time with the tax collectors and the sinners. And two of the famous ones, there's a number of famous publicans, they would call them, or tax collectors. Of course, it's Matthew, who was the writer of the Gospel of Matthew. He was a tax collector. And that when he became a follower of Jesus, he was sitting at the booth. And Jesus came along and said, follow me, and so he did. And of course, the other one is Zacchaeus, the little guy who climbed up into the tree to see the Lord, and the Lord went home and ate with him, of all things. Had a great feast, and then Zacchaeus said that he would repent and bring things back, give them back to those to whom he had taken ill from. And of course, in our country, remember in 1773, a bunch of crazy people got together, dressed up as Indians, and threw a bunch of tea in the Boston Harbor because, boy, we're going to show you King George. And so, boy, that really showed him, and we got a war out of all that thing. So this is where we are. We have to pay our taxes. We have got to, you know, fill out those little forms, and probably we're not really happy about having to do that. And the other thing that kind of comes to mind with people about, particularly Christians, about this tax thing is, like a lot of Americans, we're not particularly happy about the out-of-control spending of our dear friends up in Washington, D.C., and that our tax dollars support obscene art and fund organizations that perform abortions and even subsidize brothels in Nevada. And so that's a concern. And the expenditures, of course, on the programs that are just wasteful and extravagant and just plain ridiculous. So the question is, do we have an obligation as Christians or moral consciousness to refuse to pay taxes? Well, the answer to that comes from the text of Matthew chapter 22 and in verse 15, when the Lord is actually asked this very question. And so let's open our Bibles together. I hope you brought your gloves. We're going to be using our Bibles as we always do. And let's read a few passages here because we're going to find an answer right here. It's not a fair question. They're not actually asking because they're honest, but they're asking the very same question. Matthew 22, verse 15, the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle Jesus in his talk. And they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, Why do you test me, O you hypocrites? Show me the tax money. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, Whose image and description is this? And they said, Well, Caesar's. And he said to them, Render, therefore, to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And when they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way, shaking their heads. No doubt because they thought that they could entangle him. Well, the question was not an honest question. They really didn't want to know. They were just trying to find a way that they could entangle him in his words. And they noticed something about Jesus. You know, you look at verse 16, and they had an understanding of who he was. They said about him, "We know that you're true." In other words, they were trying to catch him, but they knew he was going to give them a straight answer. And he was going to be brief. It was going to be right to the point. And they knew that he was a man who followed the teaching of the way of God and truth. And I think that that's the way we've got to answer any of these questions. We've got to answer it by truth and according to the Word of God. And when they say that you do not care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men, it's not that he didn't care about people. They were saying that, you know, you don't really care what other people say or think. It's not up to you what is politically correct. It's not up to you what the modern world may say. It doesn't matter what they say about you or anything. You're going to establish your answer upon the truth of God's word. And I think it's important to answering the question of how Jesus answered it, because it's a very serious question that they're asking. You and I may ask that question. It doesn't have the consequences like it did in these days. If we don't pay our taxes, sure, we may get a letter from the IRS. We may get some other people knocking on our door and say, you know, you may be in trouble. And if we really just sort of do a lot of things, they might arrest us and put us in jail for a few years. During these days, you don't pay taxes, they will come and cut your head off. They will crucify. I mean, this was not a kind of a world that we live in. This was a very serious charge, because you do not rebel against Caesar. You don't just simply say to the king, "I don't want to do what you want to do." You did not do that in these days. And so their question was very serious, but they knew that they were talking to somebody who really was not motivated by any of the issues of the day, and that's exactly what they got, because the answer was somewhat simple. Show me a denarius. And we have some of those today. I don't have one, but, you know, we have some of those we've dug up, and it's got Caesar's inscription on it, and on the back side it's got different things on it. And, matter of fact, there's sort of a representation there on the overhead of what it looks like, and he just simply said, well, it's Caesar's. You give to Caesar what belongs to him, you give to God what belongs to him, and that was the answer. And what's interesting about this question is that later in Luke chapter 23, when they are charging him, or they're trying to find reasons to crucify him, one of the things that they say about him in Luke 23 is this very same question, that he's been handed over to Pilate now. He's been arrested. They're trying to find a reason to kill him. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate and began to accuse him. We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ the King. That's how serious this question is. Now, they, of course, were misguided by a huge way, because he never said that. He never told them that they were not to pay taxes. As a matter of fact, his answer was simple. It was direct. It was condemning of those who tested him. And the fact of the matter is, he said, yes, you give to Caesar what belongs to him, and you give to God what belongs to him. That was the answer. They, of course, didn't use that in Matthew 23. Luke 23. The Jews hated the Roman rule. The thing about the Roman, you think about Jesus' answer. You render to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar. Let's talk about that for a moment. What does that mean? The Caesar that he is referring to is Tiberius. The Roman government was immoral, filled with depraved tyrants. Let me remind us all that we have a lot of problems in our country. And we can say what we want about our leaders up there in the D.C. area. They pale in comparison to what we're talking about here. We're not even talking about the second cousin twice removed on your mama's side. I mean, these folks in the Roman Empire were so morally depraved. Tiberius himself, who was in power, was notorious for his sexual perversities. I mean, he had a house that was devoted for nothing but. And everybody knew what kind of immoral person he was. And if you had a political opponent, you didn't debate him, you killed him. You just went out and wiped out the whole, and families would kill one another. Mothers would kill their children. Children would kill their parents, and uncles and aunts would go out and just kill one another. The governors were corrupt. Pagan gods were worshipped. And Jewish dollars funded it. The thing that really that the Jews hated about the Romans is because they had a temple tax that we'll talk about in a moment. And what the Roman government decided to do was that, hey, we'll start taking that temple tax. Oh, that just really lit the fire with the Jews. Because the Romans realized the lucrative blessings of that temple tax, and so they started taking that temple tax for themselves. And yet Jesus said in verse 21, you give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God. What Jesus did is that he taught the recognition of the law of the land, but he also taught the law of God. And by necessary inference, the law of God took preference over the law of the land, but unless the law of God strictly forbade it, men were to obey. And so it was with taxes. They didn't have a choice. Yes, they were funding, quote unquote, a corrupt society. Yes, that they were, putting money into the coffers of a government system that was more corrupt than anything you and I have ever experienced in our lives, and I pray ever will. And yet Jesus said to render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. I mean, how would Jesus answer this? How is that possibly possible that he would do that? To say that you give to him. Well, even in the temple tax, which Jesus was not required to pay, but he did so. In Matthew chapter 17, this other incidence of the tax, because on this occasion, I think it was just an observation. It doesn't say particularly in the text, I guess, that in many ways if it was an attack on him. It just says in Matthew chapter 17, verse 24, that when they had come to Capernaum, those who received the temple tax came to Peter and said, does your teacher not pay the temple tax? And Peter says, well, yes. And so then Peter comes into the house, and Jesus anticipated him. Jesus knew that was going on. And so he says in verse 25, what do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take customs or taxes? From their sons or from their strangers? Peter said to him, from strangers. And Jesus said unto them, then the sons are free. Nevertheless, lest we offend them, go to the sea, cast in a hook, take up the fish that come up first, and when you have opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and you. I discovered something. I went fishing with this man the other day. Took me out to the Chassa Whiskey whatever thing out there. And we caught a couple of trout, and he caught some kind of a fish, and then I caught a massive, massive redfish. He took it home. I never looked in his mouth. And I'm wondering, what was in the mouth of that redfish that he was so anxious to take home? I mean, you know, I could have paid my taxes with that, right? And he's paying his taxes with it, you know. Boy, wouldn't that be a great way to pay taxes? Go fishing, you know, find a fish with a piece of money in his mouth. Well, you know, that was kind of miraculous. But what's interesting about this fish is that there are fishes, and I forgot what the name of the fish is, but there are fishes like this in the Sea of Galilee, is that they'll swallow little shiny things. And that's not uncommon necessarily. I'm not dissuading the fact that there was a miracle here, but they have found fish that if you drop a coin in the water, they'll just scoop that thing up. I'm not that well off. I don't go throw money into the water. But Jesus said, lest we offend them. He paid the temple tax. He didn't want anybody to think. And so here we've got Jesus, you know, expressing the Lord instructed him to pay the tax. Not because he was required, but to set the proper example. But the thing that Jesus has been asked, do we have to pay taxes? And he said, well, if Caesar says to pay taxes, we need to pay taxes. And I don't know, and I'm assuming that sometime in his life, in one way or another, excuse me, he exactly did that. But the answer to that is key to understanding our relationship about our government and what we do. And we have a comparison by the obligations that we have towards our government and the obligation even that Jesus taught. We find that particularly in three passages. In Romans the 13th chapter, one of the things that we need to remember as Christians is that while we have all freedoms in Jesus Christ, that freedom is established as well in our responsibilities with government. In Romans chapter 13, in verse 1, Paul says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror. They are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he, speaking of the government, he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, you need to be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. But because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. The thing about government is, it's established by God. We don't have a choice about obeying law. And I've said this a lot, and bear with me, and I'm sorry, I have to, you know, I repeat this too much. I get that way the older I get. We do not have freedom to do anything we want in this country. We live in a country based upon freedom. That does not mean that as a Christian, I can do anything I want because it's not illegal. What I mean by that is that I am bound by the law of Christ. I cannot just simply do something because I live in the United States of America and that I have the right to do things. And that would include even going against and rebelling against the government. I can't do that. Unless they are bringing a law that prohibits me from my worship to God. I can't go throw tea in the Boston Harbor and say, you know, well, I can't do that as a Christian. I can't tell the government that I'm not going to pay my taxes because I'm a Christian. I can't appeal to a higher law because the problem with that is the law that I'm rebelling against is the one that I'm to be subject to, as he says on a number of occasions in this text, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, and as well as in verse 5, therefore you must be subject. And I caution, brethren, sometimes that when we have a right to say what we want to about our government and the President of the United States, we go on thin ice when we begin to defame and speak so ill of the President of this United States. I may have a right to do that in this country, but I do not have a right to do that as a child of God because I'm a Christian. And I am obligated to obey every law in this land, whether I like it or not, and whether or not I can say, well, but there are corrupt governments. So was Tiberius. As a matter of fact, Nero was the other fellow we're going to get to in 1 Peter 2, and he was crazy. But you see, we are commanded by God that we are to be in subjection to government because the government that exists, every government in this land, in this world, is the minister of God, and we are to be subject, and we are to pay taxes, and to render to everybody the taxes to whom taxes are due. If they tax us to in high levels, we've still got to pay it. Why? Because God said so. We are to be in subjection to them. Customs or whatever it is, or fear to whom fear and honor to whom honor. And the fact that we are obligated to do that. In Titus chapter 3, in another passage that speaks of our relationship with government, he says in verse 1 of Titus chapter 3 that we are to remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work. Here it is in verse 2, to speak evil of no one. To be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. We don't have a right to go speak ill of others, especially those who are in government, especially those who, excuse me, are in the powers that be. And we cannot just speak what we want. I'll make another side verse here. You can go to the book of Jude and verse 9. This is in a companion passage. It says that in Jude 9, yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke you, but these speak evil of whatever they do not know, and whatever they know naturally, like brute beast, in these things they corrupt themselves." And what he's suggesting here of those who are speaking ill of the dignitaries, even Michael the archangel would not even do that to Satan. And yet all he said was that the Lord rebuke you. Well, Paul reminds us in Titus's account that we are to be subject to them and we're to obey. And our example as Christians is that we're to be ready to be obedient to every good work. Children of God should not be tax evaders, since we're talking about taxes. Children of God should be the best citizens of the country. Children of God should be those who are obedient to the laws of the land, whether we like it or not. Jesus did not like all the laws of the land that he lived in, and he did not condone those laws, but he said that's established by God. And so we are to be subject to those laws. And then later in 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 13, we find that Peter, who again was writing during the days of Nero, and he was again one of the most corrupt and immoral and ruler that ever walked upon the face of this earth. And yet what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13 is that therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man. Every single one of them. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to king as supreme or to governors as those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, and as free yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. What he is saying is, of course, very plain with what he says. We don't have, if it's an ordinance of man, we're to keep it. Every ordinance of man. And it doesn't matter whether it's the fellow that sits in Washington, D.C., or Tallahassee, or down the street, wherever it is around here, that way, I think, in Hernando County. You know, we've got to obey every ordinance, and no matter what it is, we've got to obey those. And that this is the will of God, that we will put to silence the ignorance of the foolish men. We cannot use our liberty as a Christian to say, well, I'm not obligated to do that because I'm a Christian. You can't do that. We're rebelling against God when we do so. And so we are to be in submission. But here's how Peter sums it up in verse 17. We are to honor all people. That's a good thing to do too. Be respectful of all people. We're to love the brotherhood. That's us. The relationship that we have. We are to fear God. You're going to hear about that in a couple of weeks. Brother Don's going to talk about fear. We need to fear God. But he also says to honor the king. We're to honor the king. Every ordinance, whatever is established by government. And if a Christian refuses to do that, they sin. They stand in condemnation. Because the Bible tells us that we have to obey those laws. And it's a lot like what Tommy said in his prayer. And I appreciate that. You know, life is not about the here. We may wind up living in a very oppressive society. But so what? We die and go to heaven. What if we lived in the Roman era? What if they went around and killed people just because they looked twice? Or what if somebody, you know, lived in the Roman era and they would kill people simply because they didn't pay their taxes or whatever? What difference does it make? We die and go to heaven, but we need to die in a relationship with God that is in accordance with His will. The oppression of this world is nothing compared to the oppression of eternal judgment if we disobey God. So, give it your best shot. If you kill me, praise God, I get to go to heaven. It's not really about here. And sometimes the perceived oppressions that we have in this world, we have lost our view of what heaven's all about. One day, all governments will come to an end. Good governments, bad governments. Every king, every president, every tyrant, every dictator, every prime minister, every whatever are all going to stand before the King of Kings one day and the Lord of Lords. So I have no fears of whether anybody's getting away with anything, because there's nobody getting away with anything, because God's going to settle that in the end. There are five things that we learn from this text. Jesus and his followers paid their taxes. We must follow their example. Secondly, Christians who owe a duty to God's kingdom also have obligation to the kingdoms of men. We must honor those in authority. Number three, our secular responsibilities are based on our spiritual values. We serve the King of Kings. We serve the Lord of Lords. He is our master. Number four, we owe respect to those in positions of government authority. Why? God demands it. And last, Christians have a higher calling to be honest, ethical, and honorable. We are to be the shining lights to others and to show them the character that manifests the Spirit of Jesus Christ. And this has always been true. Daniel was a young man who was ripped away from his home at a young age, taken away to captivity, had his whole world turned upside down, had his name changed, although we know him as Daniel, not Belshazzar. And he reigned in public office all of his life. When he was in his 90s, they threw him into the lion's den because his political opponents were trying to destroy him, and they lost. God saved him. But Daniel says, in Daniel chapter 2, as the dream had been revealed to him, sparing the life of all the wise men in one of those early stories, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the season. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. And he reveals deep and secret things, because he knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him." That's my comfort. I'm not worried about who's going to get elected in November. I'm not worried about the way that government's going to go or what's all going to be involved in that. And I know that there are concerns we need to have about our own situations and all of that. But I'm not really worried about that, because I know who is in charge of all things. And if it is God's will to raise up somebody and to put them down, that is God's will. And my friends, he knows more than you and I put together that ever lived. He is the one who reigns. He is the one who gives wisdom, and he is the one who gives understanding. And what Daniel did in his life, even serving publicly as an official, was he just simply trusted in God. And that's all that we can do. So enjoy tomorrow. Pay your taxes. But let's make sure that we serve God in everything that we do. If you're not a child of God, the invitation is to exhort you and to help you to come to a knowledge of the truth. And we pray that you have made that decision to become his child. And yet, being a child of God, let's be faithful. Let's worship God in truth and sincerity, as we talked about this morning. Let's keep our focus. Let's have a great week in serving him, so that others may see Christ living in us, and that they may come to the truth as well. Consider these things. Let's stand as we